Chinua Achebe, the author of this reading, shares how seeing everything that one knew and held dear being chased from the public square and from expectation can cause great despair. Some today, as was referenced in part by Corinne, feel that their values, and maybe even the values of our nation's promise as they understood them, are threatened. And about times like these, Achebe famously wrote, "One of the truest tests of integrity is its blunt refusal to be compromised." In times when we cannot understand what seems to be happening in our world, we can sense hope growing distant, and we begin to long for the healing power of dreams. I'm going to share two poems that I believe Reverend Anya shared with you not long ago by Harlem Renaissance poet Langston Hughes. First, dreams. Hold on to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow. Hughes wrote that one in 1926. The next one he writes after a quarter century of life experience. A dream deferred. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode? Hold on to dreams. Hold fast to hope. Well, this seems to be the reason we are here, is it not? Church exists primarily to encourage and reward hope. The religious enterprise is all about finding meaning for our lives, purpose for our living. Together, we forge the best possible community that we can. A way of relating to one another and addressing our common concerns in compelling language, loving acts of service, moving rituals, and stalwart solidarity with those who may be endangered. The grandfather of this very congregation, A. Pal Davies, used to serve at All Souls Unitarian in Washington, D.C. He founded many of the churches around the D.C. Beltway, wrote this, "The higher religion," yes, he was talking about Unitarian Universalism, "the higher religion, the faith that enlightened America's founders, is a faith of yearning, a faith that reaches out, that ever widens the tent of brotherhood, that brings hope to the lost and the downtrodden, and that inspires us to courageously search for truth while resisting superstition." Davies shows us our hope, that we have one another. We have our friends and families and this institution. We embody a longing for truth, a thirst for justice. Hold on to dreams. Hold fast to hope. Those words seem difficult to live into when we consider the past year. We have seen things many of us hoped would not see again. Vulgar, misogynist language from our nation's top leaders. Alarming reports of foreign governments having influencers inside our administration. The demonization of refugees fleeing war and misery, and now the Muslim ban 2.0. Despite the assumption that this executive order is, quote, proof we will learn the lessons of 9/11, not one of the nations from where the attackers originated on 9/11 is included in this order. A cynic might note that the president has business interests in the Muslim countries not included, but luckily for you, I'm not a cynic. We have come face to face with exactly why we gather every week, to remind ourselves of our core values, our deepest concerns, and of the eternal truths that our faith enshrines. Fairness, decency, civility, and those holy edicts that ring through the ages, demanding that we widen the tent of human welcome, not shut its doors. Do not oppress the widow or the orphan, the stranger or the poor. Be kind to the immigrant, because we were all once strangers in the land of Egypt. That comes from Zechariah. There is at least 30 other versions of those same words in the Hebrew Scriptures, spoken often throughout the world's religions. It is important to note that there's no qualifiers in this holy injunction. It says, be kind to the immigrant. It doesn't say to check their passport. And to not do these was considered the greatest wrong in the ancient Israelite world. To sell one's soul for a mess of pottage only to appear tough, this is not holiness or even good public policy. To abandon core principles for economic gain, last time I checked, is the very definition of selling one's soul. Those who cherish the values of love, hospitality, community, even due process, might be feeling a little stress right now. UUA President Peter Morales wrote this about stressful times. The first religious principle at stake is compassion. We must be a strong, persistent voice that reminds our nation and our leaders that compassion is central to all major faith traditions. To stand on the side of love is to stand with those on the margins. We are witnessing cynical demagoguery that plays on fear, and there's no place for intimidation in our public discourse. Demagogues foment fear and panic that lead to violence. Now, Morales wrote that in 2009, during, I think, those healthcare debates when they were getting particularly nasty. And I think this is a good reminder that nastiness is not new, and we have had difficult leaders before. So let us breathe deeply. Amplifying fear and despair leads really only to stress. And we know that stress is deadly. Stress has been linked to shorter lifespans, to diminished health and vitality. And stress is best managed by hope. Real hope. Hope based on love and community and life-affirming, self-loving behaviors. Being the change we need to see, for instance. Meeting new interfaith colleagues. Building alliances. Finding our path in the work we do together and in one another. There is much to be said about diminishing as much negative energy, as many destructive emotions and stress from our lives as we can. In his book, The Biology of Hope, Norman Cousins writes, "A person's outlook on life can be a vital factor in the onset and the course of disease. It follows that the wise physician when making a prognosis does not confine himself or herself solely to the destructiveness of the particular microorganism or the nature of that abnormal growth, but the wise physician functions as a human being whose skill depends just as much on the knowledge of life as it does on the knowledge of disease. The knowledge of life. The wise physician, the wise person, restores hope, dispels fear. So, how do we find our hope in an age like this? Well, first, look around, not at me, look at y'all. Often the most important thing we can do is deepen our ties with one another to support the institution that brings us together. We are a balm one for the other. We can lead each other to greater wholeness and peace. Never allow hatred and falsehood to go unchallenged. Standing up for those threatened heals us. And remember what is true, what is right, what is healing. Our lives are difficult enough without a government making us feel we have to pay constant attention, to be ever vigilant. If we're not careful, we might all suffer post-traumatic stress. So I encourage you to frequently turn off your news feeds and your social media. They don't seem to be helping very much in this age. There are things you can do, however, according to the Mayo Clinic, to alleviate stress. Regular physical activity, relaxation techniques like deep breathing, meditation, yoga, tai chi, getting a massage, maybe give your loved one a massage. Keep a sense of humor. Socialize with your family and friends. Set aside time for your hobbies. Read books. Listen to or play music. Nurture what you value. Spiritual practice. These all come from the Mayo Clinic's advice on how to alleviate stress. So yes, spiritual practice. The Mayo Clinic says it. Church is good for your health. We should paint it on the wall outside. A study of 75,000 women by Harvard epidemiologist Tyler Vanderweil showed women who went to church at least once a week lived longer, healthier, more productive lives. They were happier. Their partnerships were stronger. They had lower rates of cancer and heart disease, and their stress was significantly lower. Why? It's the routine. It's the touchstone. It's the knowing that there's a place with people you know and who care for you. A place where you can come and be with others striving to figure it all out. And think about the deep things. Remind us what is permanent, what is transient. Ponder those long, eternal questions. Where does the universe come from? What is the nature of God? What does the future of goodness and compassion look like? A place where we break bread together, gather to support and defend the truth, do some poetry slamming, whether it's about the truth of climate change or the very lives of our Muslim, Jewish, and immigrant neighbors. This heals us. Our defending the threatened heals us. Hold on to dreams. Hold fast to hope. I know this afternoon you are going to be an expression of hope, whether you're there or not. This institution is co-sponsoring this great public witness with immigrant voices at St. James in Leesburg. So strength. This is how what we do here gives us strength. We live and breathe hope, seeing that we can do something instead of nothing. Here we deliver on our promise of relationship and covenant with our very presence. In supporting our good work behind the scenes, say by passing out flyers or writing checks or baking cookies or sharing Facebook posts or serving on the board, You are a mighty people who know what to do. And we know that hope heals. It's important to remember in difficult times when those we imagine as our foes, when they challenge our ability to embrace our first principle of affirming the inherent worth and dignity of all. It's important to remember what some of my street folks say, that God don't make no junk. It's universalist theology on the street. God don't make no junk. And all that means is that we are enough. We are the hope. We never will allow, with whatever power we may have, our neighbors to be preyed upon. So don't let the bluster of fools blow you off your moral course. And don't let them drag you into getting into the sway and exchanging nasty for nasty. There are times in our lives when we are asked to stand behind our allies. There are times when we are asked to stand beside our allies, perhaps arm in arm. And as I shared with some friends from Dar al-Hijra Mosque in Falls Church a few days after the election, there may come a time when we have to stand in front of them as a holy defensive line, placing our bodies in the harm's way. To say, I too am Muslim, I too am immigrant, I too am gay, I too am poor, I too am Syrian. And if you take them, you're going to have to take me first. I understand this is not the witness all of us can do. I have a little bit too much Viking blood in my veins for a minister, but there you go. But those who can, should prepare, because the time may come just around the corner. To prepare to protect, preserve, and defend our faith, its people, its allies, its institutions, its values, as we have always done. We are again called to deeper faith, to deeper love, to deeper hope. And as my Muslim friend at Dar al-Hijra told his flock 3 days after November's election, it's something I want to share with you. Come what may, remember that we bow our heads to no man, only to God. I have never known such brave, wise citizens as my Muslim brothers and sisters at Dar al-Hijra. To watch them demonized by hate speech and terrorized by bomb threats, they received 12 just this week, fills me with tears of rage and a resolve to use this one life that I have for the movement that we can create together, a dream of the brotherhood of all peoples. All the world's peoples are our neighbors and deserve our compassion and dignity and protection. And it's surprising we have to tell supposedly educated people this. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it explode? In this time, we discover even deeper connections as we band together to do the justice work we speak of so elegantly. Albert Camus taught us that it's in the depth of winter where I finally learned that within me there lay an invincible summer. We take our lead in these times from our close colleagues. Thank God our faith has encouraged us to be in deep partnership with some of our nation's most awesome interfaith leaders right here in our community. And right now, their communities are feeling at risk. And the trust that we have built with them is paying off. For us at Accotink Church, where I serve, we have been members of Virginians Organized for Interfaith Community Engagement, VOICE, for almost 10 years, and we've developed deep ties, as you all have through Loudoun Interfaith Bridges and with the All Dulles Area Muslim Society. Having met and served with these dignified multi-faith neighbors has helped all of us be part of tomorrow's dream of a just and lasting kindness. Since the November election, Voice has added several institutions into membership, including three mosques. We now represent nearly 170,000 Northern Virginians, including nearly 50,000 Muslims. We are a power organization. They are not going to threaten us. And if they do, there will be consequences. Another voice sharing hope for our time is North Carolina NAACP leader, Reverend Dr. William Barber. For those deeply concerned about the new administration, we should recall, he says, this is not the worst thing that has ever happened. To assume that, Barber says, would be to trash the memory of the Trail of Tears or of slavery itself. It would be to ignore Jim Crow and the internment of Japanese Americans. Barber reminds us that despite how bad times may seem, there is another truth in our moral DNA. And that truth is, people have always stood up. Many times in America's past, that standing up has been led by people like you. Good church people, Unitarians and Universalists among them. And Barber teaches that we have to build a new language in this struggle to help pull people together. The old language of left and right sets people apart, he says, and so we need an evocative moral vocabulary that appeals to the dignity within all to excite a deeper morality in all of our leaders. We need to speak of a moral agenda and cast aside partisanship. We have to find a way to bring race and class together because they are eternally intertwined. And we need a legal strategy, he says, to dust off the Constitution and fight for a moral agenda on constitutional grounds while providing sanctuary to those racially and religiously targeted. Barber concludes, we are able to be the moral defibrillators of our time. I love that phrase, the moral defibrillators of our time. And shock the heart of our nation into compassion. Let me share to conclude one time when my heart was recently shocked into compassion. It was that same day at Dar-el-Hijra. And whenever I go to Dar-el-Hijra or any mosque or synagogue, I always bring my own kufi or head covering. I don't like picking one out of a box. I'm a little bit
to fit in.
Squeamish about that. That's right. And so I was wearing this because it was Friday prayers, and never having been to Friday prayers in Falls Church, I didn't know exactly what they were expecting. So I just shared what I shared, you know, with them about being in support of them. I was the only white male clergy in the room. And so I brought a message that I think some of those men wanted to hear. And to be honest, I was so emotional, I don't even remember what I said. But I do remember what happened afterwards. I walked off of the stage, and a Muslim man about 65 was just in tears, and he couldn't speak. He just hugged me. I can almost still feel how wet and warm his face was, and he handed me this prayer bracelet, and he said, "Share it with your people. Hold fast to dreams. Love burns through all decay, and the world that we dream of, if we stay together, reminded of our best selves, is just around the corner."